Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What's the most shocking thing that happened when you picked up a hitchhiker? Story 1. On my road trip to Los Angeles from New Jersey, I happened upon a hitchhiker who was old, maybe 60, and walking in the middle of the desert in Texas. He had no backpack, nothing, just the clothes on his back. I passed him at first, but quickly slammed on my brakes and put it in reverse. I figured an elderly man walking in the middle of the desert is not looking to rob, essay, or off anyone. Once I pulled over, he began jogging toward my car, but with a limp. I could already see the damage the sun had done to his unprotected face through my rearview mirror. Once he got in the car, he immediately thanked me. You could hear the desperation and dehydration in his voice. I gave him a bottle of water and then asked where he was headed. Before I could finish my sentence, he had finished the water. He said he was headed to Phoenix to go back home to his wife. He had this deep southern accent akin to Bookmaker from King of the Hill. Since I had family in Gilbert and was headed that way to begin with, I figured, what's the big deal? It was only going to be an extra hour of driving. At first, he was very short-tempered with answering the questions that I asked. Not that he was rude, just exhausted. When asked how many miles he had walked since his last ride, he replied, with relief, only 60, as if expecting to walk 200. I had a McDonald's gift card that my girlfriend sent me for the road trip, which I didn't consider using because McDonald's is a diarrhea factory. I wanted to make good time without having to crap on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere every 5 minutes, but this guy looked like he hadn't had a meal in a day or two. I pulled into the drive-thru of the next one I came across and asked him to order anything he liked. He seemed to become more chipper and have more energy once the opiates from the cheese hit him, and I must confess to the purchase of some French fries for myself. After that McDonald's stop, there were no more rest stops or gas stations for miles. About 2 hours into the journey through the desert, my car began to stall out. Looking at my quarter tank of gas, I couldn't figure out why my car was acting up. Before my road trip, I had my uncle, a mechanic his whole life, look over my car and fix everything that needed to be fixed, change the fluids, the whole nine. I naturally had a GPS and ran a search for the nearest gas station, which was 22 miles away. Trust me when I say my car sounded like it couldn't even make one more mile. I immediately started going in the direction of the suggested route. Keep in mind, there is nothing but desert and mountains as far as the eye can see. My car kept on putting its way like those sickly cars you would see in cartoons. At that moment, I realized why getting cheap gas doesn't pay off in the long run. It was a bad mix, and my car was trying to burn something that couldn't. After stalling several times, I eventually reached my destination, and it was the smallest freaking town I had ever seen. The gas station was there just like the GPS said. Well, at least what was ever left from the fire that hit it, maybe about 5 months prior. All while this was going on, my guest just kind of sat there quietly, probably too nervous to say anything for fear of possibly adding to my frustration. I stall again. I get out and walk a little bit, taking my keys, of course. I don't walk more than 50 feet before finding the first sign of life, a man watering his pavement. Yes, he was watering his pavement, again, small friggin' town in the middle of nowhere. I asked if the gas station that burnt down was the only one in town. And to my delight, it was not. There was one more about a mile into town. I got in my car, and with a putter, my engine turned over and got me the rest of the way. Once I got to the gas station, I loaded up on some snacks and drinks, knowing I still had about 10 hours of driving ahead of me. By the way, at the checkout in the gas station / bar / grocery store, I asked the attendant how many people live in town. He said 315. He knew the exact friggin' number. They had a population smaller than my high school. Anyway, having that old man hitchhiker in the car while all that was going on made it seem much more like an adventure. It gave me a little more motivation to solve the problem rather than just calling AAA. I don't know why, just did. From that point on, it was smooth sailing. Once we got back on the road, we began the awkward dance of finding a common musical interest that we could tolerate for the next 10 hours until we reached Phoenix. I mainly enjoy music like Justice and Kandinsky on these long road trips. Electro keeps me awake. Being the Southern type, he liked country. Lo and behold, there was one group we both shared a common affinity for. Leave It to the Beatles. With there only being about 2 hours left until we reached Phoenix, I began to pry about why an elderly man such as himself was hitchhiking in the first place. Turns out, he was younger than he looked. He was 53, but man was his story was sad. Having lost his job of 20 years as a janitor, he moved to Tennessee to work at a construction site. At his age, I guess maybe due to budget cuts, about a third of their workers got crap canned only after about 7 months after the start of the project, probably to be replaced by cheaper labor. In these economic times, I bet people would work for just about any wage. He had no other choice but to head back home. With his last check in hand, he headed back to cash it to fund his trip back home. With a good chunk of change in his pocket, he purchased a Greyhound bus ticket and gave a call to his wife to tell her he was on his way. Once the bus started to board, tragedy struck. Two guys jumped him, probably having seen his cash while he was paying for his ticket. He put up a fight, defending, of course, the only money he had left to his name, only to get stabbed twice in the chest. He almost died and had to spend about a month in the hospital to recover without having any health insurance whatsoever. He racked up a bill, I am sure, in the thousands. Side note, I raged when he told me about the security guard at Greyhound who just witnessed all this without doing a damn thing. He showed me the scars on his chest. The hospital kicked him out as soon as they could, because screw the poor, America rules. His wife was barely making the rent, so he decided instead of burdening her with the cost of having to buy him a bus ticket, he would hitch it. From Tennessee to Texas, only truckers picked him up and dropped him off at whatever rest stop they stumbled upon before diverting in a direction other than west. I was the only passenger vehicle to stop for him. I am glad that I picked up a hitchhiker. It made me feel good doing something for a stranger in need for no reason other than for the common good. Just remember, there are messed up people in this world, people who will do bad things in the face of charity and kindness, but there are also people who are just down on their luck, looking for a ride home wherever that may be. And for those of you who are wondering, his name was Walter. Before we continue, do us a quick favor, smash that like button and subscribe to support our channel. Story 2. I had to hitchhike once, and it was a pair of Mexican men who helped me out. The following story is 100% true. Names have been changed for the privacy of those people involved. 1:20 a.m. My friend Sally and I left a bar and ventured across the street to a lounge of sorts. 2 a.m. We hail a taxi to get home. Here is where the story begins. As I was entering the taxi, a man in a fancy Jaguar S-Type 2007 honked at us from behind. He waves his hand as if to say, "Hey, come on and get in." In the hindered state that I was in, I thought it would be a great idea. So I took Sally by the hand, pulled her out of our taxi, and we got into the back seat of the Jaguar. "Where are we headed?" I asked. "We're going to the dance club." "Sweet," I thought. "Let's go." The man, named Carlos, and his rather lovely second, as I would later learn, wife Allie, whose name was changed, started to drive. Now I told him that I lived downtown, thinking I could get a free ride home. After about 5 minutes of driving, I realized that we had been going north-north, the opposite direction of where I live. Carlos started to talk about his thriving business, and his wife smiled slyly the whole way. I was under my have-a-good-time-whatever-the-cost exterior thinking, "Holy freaking crap, what the heck did I just get myself into?" "Hey, where are we headed now?" I asked. "Our house," came the reply. So we're driving for about 20 total minutes on the highway, where I had been texting everyone I knew in a sort of last words description of where I was in case they had to find my body, before we exited and started trekking through some God-knows-where street of suburbia. Here was my oh crap moment. We arrived at their house. I will admit, their place was very lavish. They had a bar in their living room, a pool out back, and they had converted their garage into a nightclub issue party scene. They immediately started to try and feed us drinks. mango juice, and Grey Goose, imported tequila. They had everything. The thing was, there was something peculiar about the whole thing. My gut told me we had to get out of there. I had no idea where I was. When Sally and I went to the bathroom, the only thing I could tell her was, "I don't know what I just got us into, but trust me, I promise I will get us out of here safe." It became pretty apparent that Carlos and Allie were swingers, but who knew to what extent they were willing to...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Go. Sally had been complaining that Carlos had been trying to feel her up whenever I wasn't around. I had to come up with a plan, and I remembered that the original plan was for us to go to a dance club. "Hey, when are we headed to this dance club you were talking about?" Slightly offset, Carlos obliged to take us to the dance club. So again, the four of us, Carlos and his wife Sally and I, started driving north again. Further and further we were from home. We were driving down a long, somewhat shady street before finally, and thank God, because I was imagining a warehouse with devices that they wanted to use, we came to a club. I don't have any cash. I was hoping this would deter Carlos and somehow magically show him that all we wanted to do was go home. But nope, he covered the $60 for all four of us to get in, and we experienced some of the entertainment the city had to offer. I even got a short story about his son. Yeah, his son with his first wife was older than I. 10 minutes into it, Carlos said, "Hey, this place is boring. Why don't we go back to our place? It's much nicer there." Yup, I knew what was going on. He told me that I could have his wife for the night if he could get with Sally. This was not going to happen, but we still needed to get back somehow, so we piled back into his Jaguar and started driving back. On the way back, I knew there was no way I was going back into his house with his wife. At a traffic light near their place, I prayed that it would turn red. And it did. I took off my seatbelt, I undid Sally's, and we bolted out of the door and started running down the street. Luckily, they didn't chase after us and sped off. So Sally and I walked down this street for 15 minutes back to the highway, where I realized we would need a taxi. I called Yellow Cab a couple of times, but they either didn't pick up or were busy. There was only one thing I could think of, and it was something I never thought I would do. I hitchhiked. Sally and I stuck our thumbs out and waited. Driver after driver passed us, pretending not to notice us or just blatantly speeding by. I couldn't blame them. It's always a risk when you pick up hitchhikers, even if they are wearing a dress shirt and talking on their cell phone. But after about 10 minutes, some guys stopped. These were two Mexican men. They couldn't speak English that well, and by the looks of their car with Corona bottles in the back, they had been drinking. But I didn't care. They offered a ride, and I told them that as long as they were going south, they could just bring us as far as they could and let us out. Seconds felt like hours. Did these men know where we were headed? They had been drinking too. Were we going to be safe going at 70 mph? Questions raced through my head, but 20-25 minutes later, I saw the skyscrapers ahead. I have never been so happy to see the buildings that occasionally dwarfed my apartment complex. They dropped us off 2 blocks from my place. I offered them money, which they didn't take, and the only Spanish I could muster up was, "Mucho gracias." They drove off, and Sally and I slowly made our way through the streets of downtown. I was finally home. Story 3. I've picked up numerous hitchhikers, but one in particular stands out. His name was Garth, Garth was a hell of a dude with a hell of a story. This is the encounter between my friends and Garth. After graduating from high school, along with four friends, I decided to take a long road trip over the summer, and Glacier National Park was our mecca for the trip. We found ourselves camping in the middle of nowhere in the woods of northwest Montana, some 25 miles north of Missoula. We camped, got drunk, got stoned, and pretty much stayed up all night. In the morning, I woke up in the driver's seat of my car to see some dude walking by in the road, which was 40 yards away from our campsite. The guy walking couldn't see us, just passing by, but I could see him. I was still half drunk, so I decided to yell at him, not even thinking that it could be the owner of the land that we were illegally camping on. He did a 180 and stared straight at me, then began walking towards me. He had a single backpack, a big tree limb for a walking stick, and looked exhausted and hungry. He looked like the Big Lebowski mixed with Saul from Pineapple Express, but acted like someone who had just had their buns kicked, mentally and physically. He looked like someone had sucked his soul out of him. My friends heard me yelling for him, so they stirred awake to find, to their surprise, Garth sitting in one of our lawn chairs eating our stale Doritos like he hadn't eaten anything in days. We would later learn that it was true. It was about 10 a.m. by the time we decided to leave the campsite and head back to Missouri to find food. Garth hopped in the car and began to tell his story of how he ended up in the middle of nowhere, Montana. He sat shotgun and talked while my friend sat behind him, ready for Garth to try to take off us or something crazy. The story that Garth told us was freaking crazy. It went something like this. Some dude he met in Missouri promised him some work on his land. The guy bought some land and needed some trees and brush cleared so he could start building a house. He said he would let Garth stay on his land for the night and meet him there in the morning with some tools and some food so they could work all day to clear this brush. Well, one day went by, then another, and another, and another, and another. The guy never showed up. Garth was on this guy's land for 5 freaking days with no food or shelter. He luckily had a stream of water on his land that Garth drank from to keep hydrated, but catching food was next to impossible. He said he could hear coyotes very close to him at night, and one morning he woke up to a bull moose 30 yards away from him, snorting and stomping its hooves on the ground, ready to charge. Garth ran up a tree and stayed there for the rest of the day. He said he didn't want to leave the land because he had no idea where he was. He was hoping the guy would show up to take him back to town. It wasn't till this particular morning that he said he was so hungry and cold that he thought he was going to die if he didn't start walking somewhere. Garth said he started following a logging road with the hope it would lead him somewhere. He had been walking all night with no signs of anything. He thought he was walking in circles. He said the coyotes were howling, and he was the most scared he had ever been in his life. We were the first sign of people he had seen in almost 6 days. After he told us this story, we said we wanted to buy him a lunch and some beers, and a coat. He immediately declined. He seemed embarrassed by the situation, especially because some 18-year-olds were going to buy him this stuff. We understood where he was coming from, but this guy just had 6 days of hell in the woods, and he deserved a hot meal. He finally said he would eat lunch with us, so we took him to a Chinese buffet where he ate down 4 fat plates like a boss. After lunch, he asked us to take him to the homeless shelter in town so he could get a shower and get a bed for the night. We agreed and took him across town to drop him off. The car ride over was quiet, mainly because Garth dozed off, probably from his exhaustion. He was still sleeping when we got to the homeless shelter. We woke him up, and he thanked us a million times and stumbled into the shelter. My friends and I were floored by his story. We didn't say much as we hit the road north to Glacier National Park until we noticed something on the floor by the front seat. His freaking backpack. We were 40 miles north of town and didn't even think about what to do. We pulled over and turned around to take his backpack to him at the shelter. We contemplated opening it for a good 15 minutes. We thought it would be wrong and that we wouldn't want someone to do that to our pack. But our curiosity got the best of us, and we decided to open it. Garth was too epic not to find out what he had in there to aid in his wilderness adventure. We joked about what would be in there. A bloody knife, a head, some sort of body part. What we found was truly unbelievable. We found out that Garth was bipolar and diabetic, based on his medications. He had some oral glucose gel to combat his low blood sugar, a blood sugar machine, and Zoloft. It blew my mind that this man, A diabetic would even think about staying in the woods for this long while, knowing he was a diabetic. We also found a notebook that had some sketches and writings, mainly about his travels around the Pacific Northwest. I wanted to read more, but we had reached the shelter to return his pack. Garth was a friggin' man if I had ever met one. We thought he could use a little help, so we put $100 in his pack before we gave it back to him. He was inside, sitting at a table when we arrived with his pack. I held out the pack and just said, "I think you forgot something, man." He stood up and ran over to me, grabbed it, and then gave me a huge bear hug and started crying. He told me while he was hugging me that he thought that he had just lost everything he owned after we dropped him off. It was weird, but I felt like I had to hug him back, so I did. He followed us back out to our car and thanked us again and offered us a cup of coffee. We declined and said we had to be on our way to get there before dark. He understood and even offered to take a look at our car's oil and other stuff before we headed out. We said no, said goodbye, and drove off to the corner. We were stuck at a traffic light, and I could still see him in the rearview mirror, probably 50 to 60 yards behind us. He knelt to dig through his backpack. He took out his glucometer, his notebook, and then the $100 we had put in there. He saw it and started running after us, either to thank us or to try to give it back. The light turned green, and we drove off before he got to us. I stood by the car window, gave him a wave and a peace sign. He responded with a salute and the biggest smile I've ever seen. We drove off, and we never saw him again. This was our encounter with Garth, the world's manliest hobo. Wherever you are, Garth, Godspeed, my good man. Story 4. Just about every time I see someone, I stop. I kind of got out of the habit in the last couple of years, moved to a big city and all that. My girlfriend wasn't too stoked on the practice. Then some crap happened to me that changed me, and I am back to offering rides habitually. If you indulge me, it is a long story and has almost nothing to do with hitchhiking other than happening on a road. This past year, I have had 3 instances of car trouble. A blowout on a freeway, a bunch of blown fuses, and an out-of-gas situation. All of them were while driving other people's cars, which for some reason makes it worse on an emotional level. It makes it worse on a practical level as well. I carry things like a jack and extra fuses in my car. I also know enough not to park, facing downhill, on a steep incline with less than a gallon of fuel. Anyway, each of these times this crap happened, I was disgusted with how people would not bother to help me. I spent hours on the side of the freeway waiting. I watched roadside assistance vehicles blow past me, waiting for AAA to show. The 4 gas stations I asked for a gas can told me they couldn't loan them out for my safety, but I could buy a crappy 1-gallon version with no cap for $15. It was enough each time to make you say crap like this country is going to hell in a handbasket. But you know who came to my rescue. All 3 times? Immigrants. Mexican immigrants. None of them spoke a lick of the language, but one of those dudes had a profound effect on me. He was the guy who stopped to help me with a blowout with his whole family of 6 in tow. I was on the side of the road for close to 4 hours, big Jeep, blown rear tire, had a spare but no jack. I had signs in the windows of the car, big signs that said need a jack and offered money, no dice. Right as I am about to give up and just hitch out of there, a van pulls over and the dude bounds out. He sizes the situation up and calls for his youngest daughter, who speaks English. He conveys through her that he has a jack, but it is too small for the Jeep, so we will need to brace it. He then produces a saw from the van and cuts a log out of a downed tree on the side of the road. We roll it over, put his jack on top, and bam, in business. I started taking the wheel off, and if you can believe it, I broke his tire iron. It was one of those collapsible ones. I wasn't careful, and I snapped the head I needed clean off. Crap! No worries. He runs to the van, gives it to his wife, and she is gone in a flash, down the road to buy a tire iron. She is back in 15 minutes. We finished the job with a little sweat and cussing. Stupid log was starting to give, and I am a very happy man. We are both filthy and sweaty. The wife produces a large water jug for us to wash our hands in. I try to put 20 in the man's hand, but he won't take it, so I instead give it to his wife as quietly as I can. I thank them up one side and down the other. I ask the little girl where they live, thinking maybe I could send them a gift for being so awesome. She says they live in Mexico. They are here so mommy and daddy can pick peaches for the next few weeks. After that, they are going to pick cherries, then go back home. She asks if I have had lunch, and when I tell her no, she gives me a tamale from their cooler, the best freaking tamale I have ever had. So to clarify, a family that is undoubtedly poorer than you, me, and just about everyone else on that stretch of road, working on a seasonal basis where time is money, took an hour or two out of their day to help some strange dude on the side of the road when people in tow trucks were just passing me by. But we aren't done yet. I thanked them again and walked back to my car. I open the foil on the tamale because I am starving at this point, and what do I find inside? My freaking $20 bill. I whirl around and run up to the van, and the guy rolls his window down. He sees the 20 in my hand and just shakes his head. No, like he won't take it. All I can think to say is por favor, por favor, por favor, with my hands out. Dude just smiles, shakes his head, and with what looked like great concentration, tries his hardest to speak to me in English. Today, you. Tomorrow, me. Rolled up his window, drove away, his daughter waving to me in the rear view. I sat in my car eating the best freaking tamale of all time, and I just cried like a little girl. It has been a rough year, and nothing has broken my way. This was so out of left field, I just couldn't deal. In the 5 months since I changed a couple of tires, given a few rides to gas stations, and once went 50 miles out of my way to get a girl to an airport, I won't accept money. Every time I tell them the same thing when we are through. Today you, tomorrow me. Story 5. Oh man, that $15 gas can reminds me of the time I ran out of gas in my current car. I have this weird loyalty thing when it comes to refueling, and I tend to always go to the same petrol station. They were the first and are still among the few who offer E10 ethanol blended fuel at 95 octane, and it's consistently cheaper, probably thanks to the sugarcane the ethanol comes from. Anyway, I was dangerously low on fuel, but really close to one of these stations. I figured I could make it. Unfortunately, I chose a hilly route, and my car ran out literally around the corner. Like, a minute's walk, didn't quite make it. So I walked in and explained my situation, emphasized I was just around the corner, and asked if I could borrow a jerry can or something to put enough fuel in the tank to drive to the pump. At this point, it was low drama. I used to have a big old V8 that ran out all the time, so I knew they usually had something for idiots like me. But this guy told me they didn't have anything to loan out. Instead, I could buy a little 2-liter can from the back of the store for $15. I try explaining that I don't want to buy anything except fuel. I tell him I am willing to pay a bond if he's worried I might not return his fuel can, which is oh so valuable at $15 a pop, not unheard of, but no. Same deal, apparently for my safety, they can't loan anything out. So I go to the back of the store and find this $15 fuel can, one of those tiny cans meant for 2-stroke fuel for a lawnmower. I go back and tell him I don't think it's going to be good enough. For a start, there's this little pull-out piece of plastic meant to act as a funnel, like the ones you sometimes see on olive oil bottles. He tells me it should be fine, but if I want, he can sell me a real funnel for an extra $8. It's like he's discovered a little side hustle. I buy the little lawnmower can, fill it with fuel, pay the man his extortion, and go back to my car. Unfortunately, it proves completely useless as a funnel, and most of my precious fuel ends up outside the tank. In desperation, I start slowly filling an empty water bottle against my better judgment and try using that to pour fuel into the car. But it's just as hopeless. Out of those 2 liters, I manage to get so little into the tank that the car still refuses to start. Now I am pissed. I go back to the guy and tell him his useless lawnmower can that should be fine, did exactly jack squat. I just wasted all this time and money on him, and I still can't start my car. I demand my money back. We get into a massive argument. While we're arguing, some dude dashes off without paying. Karma, if you ask me, and he gets pissed at me instead. Then the guy who's been running the adjacent car wash, who turns out to be the actual owner, comes in and, of course, backs up his employee. I start ripping into him for coming up with this ridiculous policy in the first place. It all builds to a crescendo, and he ends up threatening me with physical violence. Did I mention I'd been a loyal customer who used these guys almost exclusively for years? I finally decide these guys can go screw off, and I make sure to tell them I'll be going out of my way in the future to give my business to the next guy, and will have nothing but bad things to say about them. As I walk out the door, these guys are surrounded by two other petrol stations I had never even glanced at before. I walk into the first one with my newly purchased lawnmower can and ask if they have any funnels. Unfortunately, they're out of stock. I go to the next place, and not only do they have a funnel, but they modify it to work with my crappy little can. For this, they charge me exactly $2. The normal price is $3, which I pay on top of the fuel I fill the can with. I go back to my car, get it going, and return to fill the tank. When I return to pay for a full tank, I offer to give him the lawnmower can and funnel so he can lend it to the next person. You know what he tells me? He says he already has a jerry can out back that he lends to people who run out of gas with a $20 deposit, refunded when you return the can. Can you guess where I get my fuel from now? Story 6. I have picked up plenty of hitchhikers in my life. One I remember was a man around 28 years old who was trying to get to Madison to be a test subject for a new ADD medication. Apparently, they keep you for a couple of months, regulate your diet and exercise, then give you a few $1,000s and set you free. You know, if the meds they are testing do not work for you, I got him another 50 miles down the road before I had to turn south. He was nice, though. This past June, right before our wedding, my now ex-husband picked up three crusty kids and their dog. They were hitching their way to a rainbow gathering, so he brought them home to me. We fed them and packed them goodie bags full of aspirin and hand sanitizer, along with 10 pounds of dog food, then drove them to the next state. They were a nice bunch of kids. I have also chosen not to pick up hitchhikers who I thought were suspicious, but I usually go to the nearest gas station and put together a bag of water, Gatorade, and granola bars to bring to them. Even if I think they look creepy, I still do not want them to go hungry. Story 7. I was dropping a friend off at the airport, and a middle-aged man with luggage came up to my car and asked for money for a taxi to his hotel. He did not really know the city's geography, and a taxi would have cost around $80. He did not look too happy when I told him that and explained that he had just flown in from a job interview in Detroit and was in town for another job interview the following day. After hemming and hawing, I let him jump in and drove him 40 miles to his hotel. Along the way, we passed several small towns and some beautiful countryside. He was apparently an engineer who, I kid you not, worked on rockets, the space shuttle, and other various flying things. He said he was on his last, and these job interviews were his final bit of hope. We just talked the whole time about his previous jobs, the challenges he faced in aerospace, and various three-dimensional rendering software technologies. I was fascinated by his stories and could tell he was genuinely passionate about his work. He also told me about the long hours, tight deadlines, and how sometimes even small mistakes could have massive consequences. I listened, amazed at his dedication and how much he had accomplished in his career. It was my first time picking up a hitchhiker, and he was not creepy at all. It actually turned out to be one of the most interesting car rides I have ever had. I felt a mix of awe and inspiration, realizing that sometimes the people you meet unexpectedly can leave a lasting impression. Story 8. I've actually picked up about 18 hitchhikers in the past 3 years. I went to Rutgers University, and it all started one night after I finished a very late summer class. There are 4 campuses, and each is spread pretty far apart, so the school has a very modern bus system to shuttle students around. In the summer, however, most students go home, and the buses run very infrequently at night. So, as I left class in my mom's minivan, I noticed that the last bus was pulling away to take kids back to the student center. There was a Korean student running after the bus. The driver didn't see him. As I drove past, I could see that he just sat on the bench, waiting for another bus to come. The next one wasn't till 6:30 in the morning. I stopped the van, did a U-turn, and pulled up to the stop. I powered down the window and asked him if he needed a lift to the student center. He was a bit hesitant at first. I guess it's not every day a black guy pulls up in the dead of night offering a free ride in air conditioning. So we drive, and we start to talk and find out that we have a lot in common. I dropped him off, and he offered to pay me, but I just told him to pay it forward to the next person he sees in need. That summer, the city of New Brunswick was hot. I had to cancel a class that day because it was the last day to do so, and Rutgers bureaucracy made it, so I had to go to 3 different campuses that day in order to do it, for some strange reason. Anyway, on my way to drop off the final form, I saw an older white man in his 50s with crutches and his leg in a cast walking down the street. I could see that he was struggling, and it was Rosewood hot outside. I couldn't just let him suffer while I sat there in my 7-seater, air-conditioned minivan. So I pulled over and asked him if he needed a ride. This big, genuine smile came over his face, and he thanked me numerous times and thanked God a few times too. He broke his leg and had a compound fracture after falling off his son's roof while trying to help him install a satellite dish. Nuts! The next time I picked up people was May of the following year during Rutgers Fest, where the school hires popular bands and hip-hop stars to perform for tens of thousands of students. It was amazing. I always have a great time, and I always invite my friends from Princeton to come. This Rutgers Fest, they drove their cars from Princeton and brought a few other classmates, so I was alone in the minivan again. As I was driving back to the College Avenue Student Center, I noticed that there were hundreds of students that were walking back along the highway. They didn't feel like waiting for the buses and decided to take their chances. So here I am, watching this sea of kids walking back along the highway as the sun began to set. I turned the minivan around after reaching New Brunswick and sat in traffic for a while, which I should have anticipated. When I was finally clear of the traffic, I pulled over to the side of the road and honked. I waved my hand outside the window to a group of 5 kids I saw in my rearview mirror. They looked confused at first, and then one of them realized that I was trying to help them and started running to the van, and the others followed him. I asked if they needed a lift, and they were overjoyed that I was helping them out. They each gave me their hands to shake, and I drove them back to campus, where they shook my hand again and thanked me for helping them out. I did this 2 more times, and each group was really happy. I decided that it may be time to go back home and take the 45-minute drive back to Hillside, as the sun had already set. But something almost compelled me to go back one more time. Just one more time. So I did, and unfortunately, most of the groups of kids were way too big to all fit in the van, so I drove back to campus with no one. But this feeling, just one more time, you have to go back, just kept gnawing at my soul. So I went back and saw this one kid by himself. It was pitch black out, but I could see that he was angry as he was throwing bottles under a bridge on the way back. I drove past him about 100 feet and thought to myself, "Are you sure he deserves your help?" I thought back to all the lessons in church I had about helping people in need and not judging people. So I decided to take a leap of faith and against common sense to help this kid out. I was on the side of the highway now, and I reversed parallel to him. He was so mad that he didn't even notice, and he kept on throwing rocks and bottles at the concrete in the distance. Furthermore, I honked the horn and asked him if he needed a ride. He was startled, and I could see that he wasn't crazy after all. He said that his friends ditched him and he was forced to walk back along the highway. I told him to hop in, and he thanked me a lot and occasionally turned to look at me, sort of like I was a very unexpected angel. I dropped him off near the student center and shook his hand. He thanked me again, and I told him to take it easy and to pay it forward to someone else in need. All these events made me feel good and reaffirmed my faith in humanity and God too. They were all just simple acts of kindness, a simple car ride, but there was just something about being that unexpected stranger, that good Samaritan, that didn't just think about helping others but gathered the courage to turn my thoughts of compassion into reality, that really had profound effects on my life. Those times I picked up those strangers, we went from being black or white, Hispanic or Asian, to just being people glad to be in each other's company by the end of the trip. I've always appreciated moments like that. I hope you have too. Story 9. I've never picked up a hitchhiker, but I have been one numerous times. On one occasion, I'd been touring with a local punk band from Washington State, and I was a roadie, by the way. After touring from our first stop in Medford, Oregon, and hitting every small venue we could find that also had us booked for a possible set down the west coast to Chula Vista, the band decided they wanted to take a longer road trip east into the desert and possibly find Nevada, which was a horrible idea, seeing as how these guys didn't know how to read a map. I knew it was a bad idea at the time and voiced that fact twice. Twice is as far as I go with advice if it's the same people I am talking to. I'd never been to Nevada before, so I just said screw it. They refused to read a map themselves, but every time I advised them on a direction to go, they agreed. A little over 11 miles into Nevada, the crappy van broke down. It was nearing 9 at night, so the owner of the van, Sean, the bassist, decided that we should camp in it overnight and abandon it in the morning. I woke up to find that the band had abandoned me too, curse my heavy sleeping habits at the time. Needless to say, I was pissed. A message on my phone told me that they'd stood in front of a truck until the driver let them on. The only valuable item they left is a relatively small but expensive amp. Knowing that I would have my revenge later, but being a loyal roadie, I took it with me on the walk. The trip to a truck stop was thoroughly uneventful, but consisted of me walking I don't know how many miles with my thumb to the road. I didn't get a ride. At the truck stop, however, I found a guy called Gus, at least that's what his belt buckle said. I never called him by his name or asked him what it was, I just asked a group of guys who looked like truckers if they were headed north at all. Gus spoke up and confirmed that he was headed to a town in Washington called Tumwater. If you've been there, you understand that the name, as stupid as it sounds, is more exciting than the town itself. I only had a few 20s, but it would be more than enough to pay for gas along the way. Up to this point, all the drivers I'd seen along this stretch of road had treated me the way you'd expect people to treat hitchhikers. I said to him, "You aren't wary of me, or suspect that I might do something horrible? I tell ya, I'll never forget that look of total..."
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Dumb. He made a small smile and patted a gun holster at his hip. Everything was going pretty well, and Gus even made small talk. None of that uncomfortable silence you get with strangers sometimes. It wasn't until we'd almost reached the state line between Oregon and Washington that something happened. Gus was ranting about how money's becoming useless and will eventually be a third world country when he put on the brakes hard and there was a loud sound. He'd hit a deer in broad daylight with people everywhere. I had never seen a deer hit before, even though I'd lived in Washington a few years, so I was like, "Oh crap." He stepped out of the cab, looked at the deer, then turned to me and said, "Friggin' delicious, come on, help me with this." Remember, this was in the middle of the day. Not even 15 minutes went by before a state patrol car stopped behind Gus's truck. I was like, "Dude, police." I pulled out a cigarette as the closest thing to a diversion as I thought was possible given the circumstances. Gus was covered in blood and I looked like a hoodlum, too many days without a shower, which was half right. The patrol officer dude looked at us, then the deer glowered at Gus and told him, "You should be using a serrated edge." I think promptly is a good word to describe the way the officer left. I just stood there thinking, what the heck just happened? Gus had a few unused pallets for cargo crap in his truck that he put a sheet of plastic over to hold the deer. We ate venison the whole way into Tumwater, which was pretty epic compared to Vienna sausage, my dining experience up until that 4-point buck. At the motel, because Tumwater doesn't have hotels, Gus told me that he needed me to stay until the deer meat was all gone, or take it with me, with the latter being less likely. Hauling the deer husk into the woods in the middle of the night was a lot more comforting than assisting a former butcher and present hunter to perform his task in broad freaking daylight. When I got back to get my share of the deer meat and said later to Gus, he told me that he does that kind of crap all the time and that picking up hitchhikers is something that only armed crazies like him should do regularly. As a farewell, he handed me the knife he used for the deer. He looked down at the ground, then back at my face and said, "If I see you hitchhiking in Nevada again after what you told me about your friends, I'll friggin' off you." Yeah, he was crazy. I never ran so fast away from a person, and I am no pushover. I still have the knife to this day. I left the amp in Gus's truck. Crap! Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.